We are back on Commodore Hour, about to visit with Coach Tim Corbin after his team won 2 out of 3 against Georgia over the weekend. The Commodores won 11-9 on Friday, lost the second game 13-7, then won 4-0 yesterday behind 6 shutout innings from Carter Holton. Got his 6th win. Nick Maldonado 2 innings, and Thomas Schultz pitched the 9th, held the Bulldogs to 6 hits. Welcome in, first of all, and Carter won the SEC Co-Freshman of the Week, pitched really well yesterday. What do you like about his performance against a really good Georgia lineup, as we've seen?
I came in the radio show today, and Vandy Lance and Don sitting right here to my left, and the first thing Vandy Lance said is, he's a bulldog, proverbial bulldog. he is. I mean, he's a kid that he's got great feel of the game. He's got great poise, and he attacks. He's on the attack all the time, and he doesn't get scared off by contact. He's going to keep coming right after you. But his performance was so good in so many different ways. I was glad he was able to do it in front of family and friends mm-hmm. that came from the Savannah area to visit him, since he's a Georgia boy. But I think more than anything, helped the team. I mean, he got us into the 7th inning, and we had him face Collins as just the one hitter, and then we were going to yank him. And He threw a good pitch to Collins, and Collins kind of fisted it out to left field. But anytime a freshman can get into a third game and put a bagel on the scoreboard, that's a very impressive feat.
That extra rest help him not pitching since Friday against Texas A&M?
I didn't ask him, but I'd have to say it did. I think with a short week last week and then coming back to this week, I thought it probably helped him. For him, I think there was – I was trying to think while you were asking me that question about his fastball. But, yeah, I think velocity-wise, he's pretty good, and he held it. Mm-hmm. You know, he was 94, 95 into the final inning that he pitched. So, yeah, I guess it did. But he felt good. I mean, he had all his innings, they weren't easy, some of them. I mean, that 6th was tough. You know, you get into bases loaded, one out, and he took care of business just like Schultz did on Friday night. But – That's tough. That's a lot of stress on the arm. It's a lot of stress on the mind as well.
I guess the other big headline of the weekend was Dominic Keegan. He was fantastic. First inning home run yesterday, walked the other 3 times, but he homered in every game. When he comes to the plate these days, it starts to feel like every at-bat something good's going to happen.
He's consistent. I mean, he's very consistent. I mean, the numbers are I'm thinking of consistent hitters inside this program over the time that at least I've been here. Brian Reynolds was that guy. Mm-hmm. Dominic Keegan's that guy. Dominic, I mean, he's hitting right around 400 the entire time. There's not many blips, but when he impacts a ball, you feel it. I mean, those balls that are hit, you know, initially go, okay, that one's out, but then it's way, way out. You know, uh-huh. That one he hit over the center field batter's eye on Saturday was crushed. So he's doing a good job of using the middle of the field, and that's the other thing. You hit him to all parts of the field.
Right.
You know, you
what,
got left
right
field, center
yesterday.
Field, right? Yeah. So, I mean, that's the makings of a pretty good hitter.
Do we actually know where that baseball landed on Saturday? Because I've seen a handful of big flies. That was as electric in a ball game that I've seen.
Well, the tennis center's over there, and I think everyone was okay. There were no reports that came, and I didn't hear any ambulances make their way. And that was a lot of activity over the tennis center, too, with Georgia hosting a tournament. But, yeah, that was hit. That's the furthest ball I've seen hit at that stadium in Foley Field before.
How have you seen Dom Keegan grow throughout the course of his time here at Vanderbilt, and specifically maybe from last year even to this year as he continues to – hopefully for his sake, move up the draft boards?
More of a professional hitter. I think the approach and looking for certain pitches and being ready to hit certain pitches and taking the strike zone and condensing it. I think that's what you get with older guys. And, you know, you certainly see that on the other teams too, you know, with the older guys. But Dom is, you know, he's 21. He's still a young kid. So he's still learning the game in a lot of ways, but at the same time his maturity from an offensive standpoint has really grown. And I would say that both he gives us so much defensively too. I mean, he's moved to first base because it helps our team and it puts Bulge behind the plate, but really Keegan could be behind the plate, but Bulge is DHing. So to get them both in there, to get another DH, and to play really good defense. I mean, the glove digs that he made this past weekend were really impressive, too. Notable that were almost back-to-back by Carter. So that were tough plays for Carter, and then tough plays for Dom, too, but he dug them up both up. So I just think the consistency of the total part of the game, being able to run the bases and play defense and hit.
Have to ask you about a guy that I asked you about a couple of days ago, too, and the way that Enrique Bradfield Jr. has started to impact ball games once again. I guess the word that you used for him lately is he's aggressive and he's attacking the game in a different way than he was maybe a month ago.
Yeah, he is attacking the game. He took on a very strong leadership approach to the weekend, I thought. And when you get leadership on the field, that's some of the best leadership you can get. Leadership off the field obviously is really important. We spend a lot of time on it. There's nothing like leadership on the field, and that's the guys that get on there and they present themselves. I mean, they announce their presence with a lot of confidence, and he did that. I think after the first at-bat on Friday night, it was just, I mean, he got on base every single time. But what he was doing is he was creating opportunities for us, and he was creating opportunities for us defensively too. I mean, he was on both sides of the field, holding guys to singles. We turned a double play after that one the other day. But I just think rounding the bases hard at first base, Andrew, and then center fielder bobbles the ball. He goes to second base. We score the run. That sixth inning, you know, two outs, gets on base, steals second, forces the error. Then Calvin Hewitt hits the infield ground ball and beats it out. Big play. We score three runs on that. So I just think that he's got a lot of different ways to beat you, but he was hitting the ball well. He was hitting it back up the middle of the field. He pulled the home run. He just played with a lot of confidence.
You know, I know people are enamored with the fact that he's so efficient stealing bases. He's up to 32 so far this season. No surprise that is first in the SEC. Give us a sense, once he gets to first base, just kind of the feel that the dugouts take, that the field takes once he gets to first base, because there's got to be some tension in the air the minute that Bradfield steps on first.
Well, listen to Cannon's interview on the replay yesterday on the way home, and Cannon pitched so well on Saturday for Georgia, but they asked him that question, and he said he brings a lot of anxiety. You feel him, and I think he used the word, he's a pain, and that's putting it nicely, I guess. But you know, you feel him, because the pitcher, you're split. I mean, you're split on delivering a pitch to that hitter, and you're also split on, well, I've got to do a good job of decreasing my leg time or picking over, take his legs out from underneath him. And that's a tough call. And certainly the catcher now, you're jumping through pitches, taking away space, maybe taking away strikes. I think in the hitter getting more fastballs, because you're not going to throw them out if you decelerate the ball. So there's a lot to it, but I think there's certain teams too probably that say we'll let him have second base, because if he gets second base, I don't think he's going to steal third, but he's been pretty good at stealing third base too. He takes a quick left there as well. So I just think there's a lot to it, and that's the anxiety that a guy like that brings to the game.
What's it like for you as a coach too? We were talking to Tyler Shoemaker a few weeks ago. He said, yeah, I might give him some time, so I just kind of stay out of the way. What's it like when Enrique gets on first?
Yeah, it's some freedom because he's got the green light. And, you know, you talked about his efficiency. I think the argument there would be, well, he needs to run more, which, yeah, okay, that's true. But at the same time, being efficient, not giving away outs. I think we've been thrown out 9 or 8 times this year. So I think we've been pretty good, and he's got 32 of them or 33. But I think it's the ability just to let him go. And I think when this game is played well, Kevin, that's when I feel like that's good coaching, is when you're doing nothing. You know, it's like the kids are in the playground. They're playing with a lot of freedom, and they can play with confidence. And that's a good feeling.
Coach Tim Corbin is our guest here on Commodore Hour. We're coming back with more in just a moment on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Welcome back to the Commodore Hour. Andrew Allegretti here alongside Kevin Ingram and alongside the head coach of Vanderbilt baseball, Tim Corbin. Coming up in a couple of seconds, we'll talk with Vanderbilt women's basketball really star Jordan Cambridge. Had a wonderful, wonderful season and recorded the very first triple-double in program history against Texas A&M during the SEC tournament. So that comes up at 6:30. Here with Coach Corbin, I'm going to dip my toes, and this is always dangerous, rules. I want to make sure that folks can understand to the best of our ability what happens against Georgia with Jonathan Vastine getting thrown out, the runner's interference on that situation, and then Javi Baez was given third and then told to go back to second base. This is not a critique in any way. I just want to make sure that we can understand the rules so we can watch the game in a better sense. Mm-hmm. So what was explained to you on those two calls?
Well, it was a second-level obstruction. I mean, there's the from an obstruction standpoint, if you obstruct the runner from his advancement going to a base and they see that the runner was attempting to go to a base, then it falls into an obstruction number one in which he would get the base. It fell into an obstruction two, which means he would have been safe at second base, but they didn't feel like after they reviewed it that he attempted to take off towards third base. He slid, got up, made a move that way, but he stopped. And my contention was, why'd he call it number one? I don't like slowing the game down. It was 13 minutes of waiting, and I know fans don't like that. But I was trying to get an explanation for why he called it to begin with, what he saw, and then what they reviewed and what they heard on the way back. And what they heard on the way back was that he was not attempting to go to third base, so he should stay at second base, and it fell into an obstruction number two violation.
Okay, so that was the Javi Baez play on Sunday at second base trying to go to third. Jonathan Vastine back on Friday night.
Right.
Laid down the sacrifice bunt, got to first base because the throw got away from third. They go back, they take a look, and they say, well, excuse me, they did call runner's interference initially. We tried to challenge that, or I don't know if we did or the officials did. I can let you clarify that one. Mm-hmm. But then upon review, they confirmed the fact that it was runner's interference. Why was that?
Okay, well, I did challenge it, but they took the challenge away from me and they challenged it themselves. So they had question. But the home plate umpire called it, and typically those calls come from balls that are shallow in which they're throwing behind the runner, which they were. Jonathan was running down first base at the 45-foot mark where that box is painted. The runner has to be within that line, and he was on the inside of the line. And when he went down to first base, did he interfere with a first baseman? He did, but it was a poor throw. And the throw actually, the throw was poor to where he did interfere with the first baseman. But I guess the thing is, if Jonathan was running on the line, there would have been no interference call. Because, you know, then if it hits him, he's running, and that's not his fault. And they would have reviewed that and seen that. But when they did review it, it was clear to them. And it's kind of a, you know, we talked about it, you know, before the game, and it's kind of a weird rule the way it's written, just because that happens more times than you know, and it usually happens when the ball is sprayed out to the infield and they're throwing back to the first baseman and runner interferes with the first baseman, but nothing's ever called that way.
Yeah, and again, just to be clear, none of that was to be critiqueful of anybody, but just to try to better understand the situation that happens on the field. Let's go big picture for a second with this past weekend. You guys have been looking for that signature series win. Good series wins, no doubt, against Florida. A good series win against Kentucky, Missouri. So 4-4 in series victories. But you go on the road. You beat the number 3 RPI team in the country. What did you feel like you learned about your group and how you want to manage this team down the stretch these next two weekends as you move toward Hoover?
Well, I thought we competed well. I didn't think our games were pretty. I thought we certainly made some mistakes, but we never backed off. And I just felt like during the course of the year, there's been certain times where we've gotten on our heels and we haven't responded. I thought we responded the entire weekend. I mean, that was talk about counterpunching. That's all it was on Friday night. It was 1-1, 2-2, 3-3, 1-1, you know, the entire time. And when you're playing on the road like that, that can kind of weaken another team, but it never weakened us. I thought our energy was really, really good. I liked how the guys held on at the end. You win a two-run ball game, and you get those last three outs that Thomas Schultz got. Those are tough, tough outs, especially against a good hitting team like they are. So I thought that was good. Saturday's game wasn't as pretty, obviously, because we had the inning from hell where 8 runs were given up. But at the same time, the game was pretty clean for us and pretty well played before that and after that. Because after that, we put on a rush. And, you know, we went from 4-7 and we kept on playing. And, I told the kids after that, I said, that's it. That's it. Just keep playing. Just keep playing. I know we came up on the other side of it, but just keep playing. And we did. And then we put it to bed real quick. And then we got up the next morning and our approach was good. And that was, you know, from a game standpoint, it almost looked like Sunday was more of a Friday night game and Friday was more of a Sunday game. If you look at how the games were played. But anyway, it doesn't matter. But we came out and really pitched well. And we played pretty good defense on we played good defense on Sunday. We played tremendous outfield defense, two big hits, but the pitching with Holton and Maldonado and Schultze was really good.
Davis Diaz had a really nice season at third base. Important to show that you have confidence in him after he had a tough day on Saturday.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, he's beaten up. That's a kid who cares a lot, you know. And you go to dinner that night, and you see him sitting at the table. And Davis, you see Davis's teeth all the time. He's always smiling. He brings great energy to any area that he's in. And you could tell he was a little bit down, but he bounces back, too. He's a tough kid, and I knew that he'd be fine. I told him in the middle of that game, I said, you played a lot of baseball. I guarantee you that's the worst inning of defense you've ever had. I said, shake it off and move forward. So he was good. Davis is a heck of a kid.
Javier Vaz also had a nice weekend. Thoughts on his performance, you know, especially that big double yesterday. Was it really key hit in the game?
Attacking. I mean, you know, I said that about Enrique, but it was the same thing. You know, he had big hit on Friday, and then that hit on Sunday was huge. You know, it was a two-run shot right after we'd gone second and third, and that was a big hit at the time, and certainly his catch in the outfield was a tremendous catch. I mean, he was running full speed, and he had to cover a lot of territory to get to that ball, and then he leapfrogged the fence after he caught it. But that was a good play. Plays with a lot of passion. I thought he was seeing the ball well. The thing about Javi is he puts the ball in play. He doesn't strike out. You know, he's gonna give you an honest at-bat, and he's the one kid that when you get to two strikes, I just don't fear anything. I mean, I feel like, okay, you got him almost at his best now because he really, really concentrates well.
Yeah, we saw that last June in Omaha, didn't we? I mean, that's one of the most memorable at-bats that you can think of, that guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's such a big moment, too. Yeah. And I think, you know, even I have to remind myself that when kids have those moments in those in environments, that's big because that's going to help you down the road. The fact that he's been there before and knows how to breathe inside that environment, it does. It plays up.
I want to ask you about a couple guys on the back end of the bullpen. Nick Maldonado, and you mentioned Thomas Schultze. That tandem's working well. And what about Maldonado? A good sign you're able to use him multiple times in series like that now?
Good sign from a health standpoint, too. Yeah, you're right. Usability, playability, chance to win, for sure. Because we used him that way last year. And we just had, you know, this year he started at the beginning, then got injured. So we had to pull him out. But, really good right now because he, too, like Javi, has a good heartbeat when he gets in there. And he's a bulldog, too. He comes right after you, and he certainly is tough on the righties. What I liked is he got Anderson and Acton out in that eighth inning the other day. Now, those were two really good left-handed hitters who really flourish on contact, and he got both of them to ground out weakly, and we turned the ball into out, so I thought Maldo did a great job.
You certainly grabbed people's attention with your starting rotation, I would think, over the weekend going Christian Little, then Chris McElthane and Carter Holton. First off, your thoughts on Christian's performance, and I don't know how much of that was just to match up Chris McElthane with Jonathan Cannon on Saturday, because that's the way Georgia lays it out.
Right. We didn't match it up for that, but it kind of fell that way. I would say Christian did a good job, by the way. I thought he battled well. We didn't help him out. We didn't make some plays behind him, which hurt him. But at the same time, I thought he competed really well. I thought he threw decent amount of strikes. His fastball was pretty good. He was landing his breaking ball. He got hit a little bit, but not at the level that he pitched well enough for us to win. He really did. So I thought it was good. And I think, you know, with Christian, he's kind of this, to me, he's like this silver bullet. He presents an issue to us because he can do a lot of different things. he can start. But if you want to put him on the back end and let him come in and touch the ball a couple of times during a week, he's got a chance to win for you that way too. So he's pretty good, though, and he gets better all the time.
He got the win on Friday, correct?
He did, because we, which is another rule, we called it a staff day. So before the game started, we just said this is going to be a staff day. So it falls out of the five-inning realm where a pitcher has to pitch five innings in order to get the win. Because it's a staff day and because you're going to use multiple pitchers, he got the win.
I guess what I'm laughing about is how many guys can get a Friday night victory in one season and in the same season also close out and save a no-hitter in the back end. That's kind of what you're talking about with his ability to do multiple things for you.
That's quick mind, Andrew. Yeah, that was quick. That was, yeah, that's right. I mean, and that's what he is. I mean, he's that guy. And the thing is, too, on the back end, he brings a little power to you, and you can extend him. Kind of like Maldi, you know, and Schultz to that degree, too. All of those kids have started before, which is a unique piece, and it really helps you if you want to use them for more than two innings.
And just really quickly, just updates to the best of your ability on Tate Colwick, and I know Cal Hewitt did not play on Sunday in part because he was a little dinked up.
Mm-hmm. Tate rolled his wrist on Friday night in the middle of that game. We had to pull him out. He's very sore on Saturday. Felt better on Sunday enough to where we played defense, and we inserted him late in the game at second base. That's a good thing. Cal Hewitt had a ligament issue in his thumb. He got a shot today. Hopefully we can get him back for the weekend. We'll lose him tomorrow night, so he won't be around tomorrow night. He's playing well, though. And then who else did you ask me about? The Cal Hewitt, Colwick.
I asked you about those two guys, but you know, I know there's a couple of other guys here or there. We haven't seen Gavin Cassis in a little bit as well. So to as much as you want to share, that's your call there.
Gavin's getting some minor surgery on his knee, and he'll be back probably before the season ends.
I guess thoughts on Indiana State as we wrap up. Good program. We saw them here for the regional last June.
We've seen them a lot.
We have, yeah.
Yeah, they've been in our regional quite a bit. They're good. They can hit. They always can hit. Go older team, that's broken record. But they're certainly a good team. I think they've won 27 games, but they always play good defense, very well coached, and anytime they play us, that's always a tough game. So certainly we got to respond, get back. I'm happy for the kids now because exams by tonight. I think the last papers are turned in. So tomorrow they'll be academically free, and that's the best feeling in the world.
I remember the feeling. It's fun.
You always said, though, that makes a difference, especially for first-year players when that happens.
Oh,
you see
gosh.
It change.
Yeah, I mean, that's real. I mean, that's a real deal. I'm not saying Vanderbilt's better than any other school, but I'll tell you what, these classes are challenging, and these kids – you know, they wear it. I mean, it's tough. I talked to a couple kids. They had 30-page papers over the course of the weekend. And Christian Little, by the way, is taking an exam 1 hour up until the time we left on Friday. So, I mean, it happens. I mean, that's part of being a student-athlete. So there's no complaining, but it certainly helps them as they move forward because it's organization of time and competing mentally and then removing yourself and then competing physically and mentally inside of competition. I thought he did a nice job with that.
Glad I don't have to do any 30-page papers.
Yeah, that makes two of us.
Coach Corbin, thank you so much for your time. Best of luck tomorrow and moving forward to this weekend. Thanks again.
Thanks, gang. Yep.
We'll step aside, come back in a couple of seconds, talk with Jordan Cambridge from the women's basketball program after this on the Commodore Hour.
Welcome back to Commodore Hour inside the Commodore Grill at the Holiday Inn here on West End. Great to have you with us. Alongside Andrew Allegretta, I'm Kevin Ingram, and we are joined by a young woman whose team went 16-19, 4-12 in the SEC. She was terrific, averaged 10 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists, nearly 4 steals, made the SEC's all-defensive team for the second time, Nashville's very own. Jordan Cambridge, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
We're doing great. Congratulations too. Going to graduate on Friday. That's got to feel good.
Feels really good. It's been a long time coming, but it also feels like it went really fast, so I'm excited.
We were talking to Coach Corbin about taking finals. Does it feel like just the weight of the world's off your shoulders when you get
Honestly, it does. Last week, I've been waiting for an entire week for one final because I only had one, and it was today. So for a whole week, I was doing absolutely nothing. So
What about for this team just this past season? You went to the NIT, won a couple games there, won one in the SEC tournament. We'll talk about that with your triple-double. But how do you feel like the postseason run set this team up for future success?
Honestly, I just want to say that I'm really proud of my team for this year, proud of my coaches for everything they helped us accomplish in just 1 year. And us just making to the postseason in general just shows you where we're going. Like, our coaches did this in one season. So the sky is really the limit for us. I think we showed that we're capable of winning games and competing with some of the best teams. So I'm just really excited for June for us to come back and get to work with all of our new people.
How did Coach Ralph and the staff really connect with you guys so well?
I think they really came in and wanted to build culture first. So when they first got here, it wasn't just about basketball. They weren't just like, oh, let's get on the court, let's run this drill. They were like, tell me about yourself. Like, what do you like? Like, how are you as a person? What do you like to do? What do you not like? Like, what do you want to do when you're not playing basketball anymore? And they were really big on us building relationships with them and then with each other. And I feel like that made us want to play for them even more because we knew they cared about us. And we were just like, oh, I'll do anything this woman asked me to do without hesitation. So I really appreciate them taking the time to invest in us because it was different for us, especially. I mean, we didn't know them. They didn't know us. So it was really important for us to do that.
What is your relationship with Coach Ralph? I think people hopefully at this point know your story, right? So Coach Ralph and you both share a similar injury history with your knees. What did that create in terms of a bond? How were you guys able to mesh? How long did it take? Because just because you guys both had knee injuries doesn't automatically make you guys friends. So how long did that take, and what did that whole relationship mean to you individually throughout the course of the year?
I honestly don't think it took too long because me personally, when they were hired, I was like, I'm going to be invested to whoever they bring in because, you know, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay here, so I'm going to be invested in whoever is going to come. So when she came, and it was only like me, I was here because I live here, and they were here. So I would just go up to the offices and like go just hang around just to kind of get to know them a little bit. And it was just like instantaneous that I was just like, oh, yeah, I really love them. And Coach Ralph, when we got to a bond and she like told me her story about all of her injuries, and I thought I had it bad, you know. So I was like, wow, you went through all of that and you still did everything that you did when you played at UConn. So I was like, oh, yeah, that can be me. And it was like an instant bond. And then, you know, being the point guard on the team, I feel like you always have to have a good relationship with your coach. And then her believing in me to be the captain of the team, that just made everything better. And I'm just like, I'm really grateful for her, for our relationship, for her being my coach. And I'm just really looking forward to next year.
Not to rehash it too much, but refresh people's memories on the knee situation that you had, because it's two, correct?
Yeah, it's two.
It's one from each knee.
Yeah, so my right knee, I tore it in high school going into my senior year, tore my ACL and my lateral meniscus, and after that I kind of had complications after the fact, so I ended up developing arthrofibrosis in my right knee, which left me not being able to bend and straighten my knee all the way. So after a couple months of not really recovering, I had to have another surgery where they went in, they cleaned some stuff out, and it gave me a lot more flexion, both bending and straightening. And to this day, I still can't bend it all the way, but it's enough to let me play. So I'm grateful for that. And then I tore my left ACL in my sophomore year, last game, first game of the SEC tournament. And that one went a lot more smoothly. I didn't have any complications from it. I'm doing great right now. And yeah, I'm just grateful that I was at Vanderbilt and had to have the best staff around me to help me recover from it.
You know, I've talked with plenty of athletes that have gone through season-ending injuries, and there's always a stretch during the time away from the court that is uniquely challenging. I'm curious about yours and specifically who helped you get through it, because there seems to always be one person or two, a support system that helps the student-athlete kind of get back over the hump, get back out on the floor. What was your story?
For my right knee, I think it was a lot more challenging than my left knee because it was my first time doing it. I think it was really hard for me mentally, and I didn't even realize it was that hard for me mentally until after I was already cleared, and then I kind of like looked back on, like, I feel like I really changed as a person because I was just down because I couldn't play, and then I didn't play in high school, and I got to college, and I couldn't play right away, and it was just really hard. But I would say, for one, my mom was really there for me, and even when I was like not the nicest person because I was going through a lot, she was still, you know, there supporting me, encouraging me and everything. And then when I got to school and toured again, I feel like my trainers, I had a special physical therapist like outside at Vanderbilt Orthopedics. She really helped me a lot. So I really, you know, relied on the people around me and my teammates and the people who I was doing PT with every day to keep me motivated and kind of looking for the future. And really just, I also tried to like listen to other people's stories because I know a lot of people tear their ACLs all the time. So if they can recover from it and they have stuff going on, then I can do it too. So that was kind of how I got through it.
Our guest is Jordan Cambridge from Vanderbilt Women's Basketball. And we mentioned earlier the triple-double you had against Texas A&M. And I had the pleasure of having a front-row seat for that. How cool was that? And to get the assist when Brene hit the three-pointer right at the end of the game when everybody's thinking, ah, you just kind of run the clock out here. But you had, everybody's kind of aware of what was happening in that moment for you.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I really didn't know until I think it was like a minute left in the game. There was a timeout. And then Coach Kevin, he was like, hey, you need one more assist. And I kind of like looked up at the scoreboard and I saw that I had double-digit rebounds, double-digit points. And I was like, oh, this must be for a triple-double. So I was like, okay. So my teammates was like, oh, we got you. Just get the ball up. We got you. I was like, okay. Sasha was like, oh, I'll get you a layup. Just throw it up there. I'll make it. I was like, okay. But it ended up being Brene. It worked out perfectly. You know, she's my best friend. I've been playing together forever. So that actually was very special that she just happened. They got double-teamed, just threw it up there. I was like, she caught it, went in, and it was very exciting, honestly.
Was there a moment when that ball was in the air? It's like, oh, man, I sure hope that goes in.
I knew it was going in, honestly. Like, there's two people on the team, Ayana and Brene. Every time they shoot, I think it's going in. So when they miss, I was just like, why are you missing? You know, so.
Did you know that it was the first one in school history?
I did not.
So when you found that out, what did that mean to you, considering your connection here to Vanderbilt at this point, being an Asheville girl, playing at Vanderbilt, all of that sort of stuff?
It just made it 10 times more special. I remember they were doing the interview, and they said that. And I was like, wait, can you say that again? Are you, like me? And I was like, there have been so many, you know, special players that have come through Vanderbilt, and it's just an honor to have been the first one to do something like this. So, you know, my name's going to be in the record books forever. So, I mean, that's pretty special to be a hometown kid.
That one and the Steals record, which you said as well. So there's two of them, Jordan. That one must have been, I think you picked that one up in one of the WNIT games,
yes,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So both of those moments must hold a level of significance. And by the way, I should mention, and I don't think I'm overstepping, my understanding is you're coming back next year. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, so we get another season of Jordan Cambridge to build on those records as well. What did that moment mean to you?
Honestly, it meant everything. Like, I feel like Vanderbilt is a very special place, and to me it's even more special because I live literally right down the street. And just to get to have my family here and say that I'm from here, I have such an amazing school in my backyard. I come here and I get my name in the record books. Like, I don't think anyone can have it any better than that, honestly. So
our guest is Jordan Cambridge. We have more to come on Commodore Hour. Don't go away here on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Welcome back inside the Holiday Inn Commodore Grill, wrapping up with Jordan Cambridge. Final couple of minutes with the star from Vanderbilt women's basketball. Again, I do not use that word lightly because it's the first triple-double in program history this past season. Single season steals record for you as well, so I feel like star fits. You know, just to kind of go full circle on your whole story, we talk about Enrique Bradfield on the baseball team all of the time and kind of marvel at his ability to steal bases. You have created this niche for yourself to be a tremendous point guard and a tremendous defensive point guard as well. So take us inside the inner workings of coming up with a steal. How does it work? What do you look for? And how do you anticipate everything?
Honestly, a lot of people ask me this question, and I really don't have a thought process behind it. I mean, I've kind of, growing up, like, I've always been, it's been defense wins games. So, you know, I feel like defense is really a mindset, and it, you put whatever you want into it. And I wish I had a better answer for you, but when I get the steals and they're just coming down and I just rip it away, I really don't have an answer. It just kind of happens. You know, they put the ball in my eyesight really close to my hands, and I'm sure it's on the scouting report to not do that. So,
which is the amazing part, too, because you know it's there. Bare minimum, I've been told, through all of your family, it comes at you honest because whoever it happens to be, whether it's your father, all that sort of stuff, there's plenty of super athletes out there that can kind of do that same exact thing as well, huh?
Yeah. My family Yeah, I think it's in the blood, honestly. Because my dad, if you look him up, he has like the record for all time steals or whatever. So that's the record I'm coming for next year. I'm putting that out there right now. I've already told him. I'm like, listen, I'm coming for your 160 mark. It's in my head. He's like, it's gonna be hard. I'm like, okay, that's fine, but I'm ready. That's what I'm coming for.
So 160 was his.
Yeah.
You had 129 this past season. Yeah. That's not that many more.
Exactly.
Okay, I was gonna ask you this. If you're doing a power rankings of basketball players in your family, where do you feel like you would stand?
I mean, I'm super confident, so I'm going to have to put myself at number one.
Right.
But
that's the right answer.
I would never put my siblings above myself in that category. But my younger sister, Jelani, the sophomore, yeah, she's her. She's that girl. Has a whole lot of potential. She's doing all of the things she's doing, getting offers at 16 years old.
Sure.
I can say when I was 16, I was not as good as she is right now. So, but she still can't beat me. So,
now your brothers, Devin and Desmond, they're going to play together at Arizona State now, right?
Yes, sir. Yep. They wanted to play together, and I'm glad they are going to get the opportunity to do that. I'm excited to watch. They're going really far away, but I've never been to Arizona for real, so it'll be a chance for me to get up there and visit them. Hopefully, maybe get to see them play or something. Probably sure. not, because, you know, we play at the same time, but... It's wishful thinking.
You probably got to see Devin play some in the SEC, right?
Yeah, I got to see Devin play when they came here, whenever they come here and play, so I love getting to do that. But Dez, I never really could see him play because he went to Nevada and he went to Brown. I'm like, he's just really far. So,
what are some priorities for this team going into next season for year two under Coach Ralph and the staff?
I think just getting better, honestly. We're going to have new people coming in, and it's kind of going to feel like starting fresh again. Mm-hmm. Just like last year, you know, building that culture, making sure that everyone on the team is on the same page and they know what we're trying to get out of the season. They know what our goals, our expectations are, what we do, how we do things, how we don't do things. And I feel like that's really the start. So when everyone gets back here in June, that's where it's going to start, us building relationships with each other, growing in the relationships with our coaches, and then, you know, just getting on the court and getting ready to shock some people.
Well, those freshmen this season, they came along really quickly, didn't they? Whether it's Sasha or Ayana or some of the others.
Yeah, I'm really proud of our freshmen, honestly. I think Sasha grew the most of the freshmen. I think you can see her big jump from the beginning of the season to where she finished. I don't think if you watch her at the beginning of the season, you wouldn't think that she would be doing what she was doing for us at the end of the year. So I'm really proud of that. And Ayana, I mean, we saw the potential from the get. You know, she wasn't scared of anything. She just came in. She's a full, complete scorer, and I love that. She wasn't afraid of the moment. We asked her to do some pretty big things for a freshman to have to do. There's a lot of weight on her shoulders, and I think she handled it really, really well. So I'm just excited for her for next year because, honestly, the sky's the limit, and there's so much more for her to do at Vanderbilt, and I'm just excited that I got to get to play 2 years with her.
She'll help you get some assists, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know that's for sure.
Now, was there a point in this season or a win or just a spot in a game where you felt like, okay, this thing's turning in our favor? You can feel the program turning back in a positive direction.
Honestly, it was kind of early. I started seeing glimpses. I think it was maybe after our fifth or sixth game, we completely like changed what we were doing. It was just like we came in practice one day, we're like, oh yeah, the offense we're doing, we're not doing that anymore. We're going to do something different. The defense we're doing, we're not doing that anymore. We're going to do something different. And I think it was because like Coach Ralph, she's the kind of coach. She's like, yeah, I come in with a vision, but if it doesn't work for the team that I have, I'm going to adjust for my team, and I'm going to make sure that whatever I'm trying to do fits best with what they can do. And at that moment, I was like, oh, we can really play with some teams. You know, we changed our offense to fit best with how we like to play.
Sure.
And then our defense kind of picked up from there, and that's the moment that we start being known for our defense and, like, getting steals and turning teams over. And then after that, I was like, oh, yeah. With a little bit more time, yeah. I'm ready. I'm excited. I'm really excited to keep growing and building on that.
And for what it's worth, the defensive change, not only did it suit the team, but it really suited you specifically as well. So that was wonderful to see. I want to get you out of here on this. I feel like I at least have to ask you one question about Ensworth. Because we've got some kids from Nashville that play at Vanderbilt, but not necessarily a roster full of them.
Yep.
So give me a sense on, first off, what it means to play at Vanderbilt, like you were talking about, considering you played at Ensworth, and I want your favorite moments on the floor as a player, as a high school player at Ensworth.
Okay, let me just start with that. My favorite moment as a high school player at Ensworth was I only won one state championship, so it's going to have to be my state championship game. It was my junior year. We were really good. It was an amazing feeling because I'm like, I have to get one. I have to get a ring. And, you know, we did it that year. Got MVP. So that was a really exciting time. And what else did you ask?
Just the ability to play in your hometown. I know you kind of touched on it a little bit, but for the sake of underscoring it, it's got to mean something to you to go to Ensworth, to come here, to make the impact, and to get the education that you've gotten as well.
Yeah. First of all, I'm really grateful for the education that I got at Ensworth and then that I got at Vanderbilt. That actually was a big part of me getting recruited. My mom's like, listen, you went to Ensworth, you got a great education, let's do something with it. I was like, you know, you're right. So that was huge, sir. All the schools were recruiting me. I'm like, I have to be big on academics, and to have Vanderbilt in my backyard is really special. But honestly, getting to play at home, I feel like it feels amazing to me, special for me. But when I think about it, it makes it mean more when I think about the kids who are looking at me, who are growing up, and like, oh, she stayed at home, you know, she stayed at home and she's trying to help build up a program. You know, it's not, I feel like it's not always about going somewhere and just, you know, being another name, a part of a program that's already doing everything. So I'm like, I wanted to come somewhere, make it special in my backyard and get my name out there and, you know, help the program build. And I feel like that's what I'm doing here. So to get to see, especially now recently, after this season, I've been having a lot of kids come up to me and say, you know, they look up to me and wanted me to talk to them. And that makes me feel good because it makes me feel like I'm doing something good in the world and having kids follow my footsteps. So I feel like that's the most important, especially kids in Nashville.
Jordan Cambridge, unless you've got one last question.
I was going to say, yeah, thanks. Thank you so much for the time, spending a half hour here with us. And all the best as you go forward, and congratulations on graduating this week.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
That's Jordan Cambridge from the Vanderbilt Women's Basketball Program. Make sure you go support that team and head coach Jay Ralph next season back inside Memorial. Jordan Cambridge will be back for another season with that squad. We'll step aside, come back in a couple of seconds on the Commodore Hour across the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Very much, you know.
They're deeply impressive, every single one of them. They always are. It's the beauty of working at a place like Vanderbilt's to have the thoughtful, well-articulated, well-spoken student-athletes. And they go through so much. I mean, Coach Corbin talked about the fact that Christian Little was taking an exam during the day on Friday before he grabbed the baseball Friday night to pitch against one of, if not the best, offensive teams in the SEC. That is a ridiculous load to shoulder mentally for these guys and physically, and it's remarkable how consistently they stand up and rise to the challenge. Yes, we all want to win every single game that we play. I understand it, but when you consider the full picture of what they're going through, tremendous respect to all of them, whether it was Quentin last week or Jordan this week.
And her story is really cool.
Yes.
You're playing through all the injuries and everything that's gone on during her time here. Really admire her and thrilled that she's coming back for another season, has a chance to add to some of her entries in the record book. So looking forward to that. A couple things to mention going on. Women's NCAA Golf Regional began today down at the Vanderbilt Legends Club. The team really had a good day. Third overall with an even par 288. That's one stroke behind Duke and Alabama. Tess Davenport, Jana Choi, tied for sixth. They shot 71. Austin Kim is 72, tied for 11th, so only one stroke behind. Women's tennis beat Xavier and host Ohio State in Columbus over the weekend to advance to the NCAA Super Regionals in tennis. So congratulations there. They'll play Texas A&M next, but they beat the number 10 Buckeyes 4-2, winning three singles matches after taking the doubles point. Men's golf is the top seed, as we found out last week, in the Palm Beach Gardens Regional. They'll play next week. One of the favorites, really, to do some big things in the NCAA tournament. So a little taste of some of the other things going on around campus.
Yeah, a quick congratulations, too, to the women's lacrosse team that made it to the AAC championship game. Now, they did fall to heavily favorited Florida, but they made it to the championship game and had a good season. Again, as always, we talk the quirkiness of the fact that the women's lacrosse program plays in the American Athletic Conference, like bowling is in the Southland Conference or whatever, but some good stuff across the board for a lot of these spring sports.
Looking forward to another big week ahead for Vanderbilt baseball. It'll be tomorrow night against Indiana State. The Sycamores know their way around Hawkins Field. They've been here plenty, including the NCAA Regional last year. That'll be a tough matchup as usual. And then down to Fayetteville to play Arkansas for three games Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And you hope the Commodores can build on that momentum from that really nice series win against Georgia.
Yeah, we care about those SEC series victories a whole bunch. And the fact that they're 4-4 is huge, but we cannot understate at all how significant Devin Futrell has been throughout the course of this season. The reason Vanderbilt has a top five RPI is because they've only lost, in parts, one midweek game. Devin Futrell is first, Kevin, first in the SEC in ERA at 2.03. Another chance for him to bolster his statistics and help Vanderbilt get a big win tomorrow.
6 o'clock tomorrow night, Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, also SEC Network Plus. This is also our final show for this season here at the Commodore Grill. Yes. So thanks to all the folks here for having us. Thanks to Gus Wedekamp in our studios for his great work as well.
100%. We will have another show. Roe Coleman expected to join us next week.
For Andrew Allegretta, I'm Kevin Ingram. That's been the Commodore Hour on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.